Madam PLO Lumumba, here at the thicker blue posts in Kiambu County, and behind me is the Chania Falls. We are in the Republic of Kenya, and we continue discussions regarding the continent of Africa. And today we are looking at African law, if there is something that can be so characterized. Because as you know, Africa is a diverse continent with many nations. When you come from the West, you'll meet the Wolof, you'll meet the Mandinka, you'll meet the Igbo, the Yoruba, you'll meet the Bambara, you'll meet the Mosi, you'll meet the Baganda, the Banyarwanda, the Watutsi, the Amhara, the Oromo, the Luo, and all these constitute a diverse continent, which unhappily was divided into 54 odd states. We now know that there are even 55, 56, because some are not recognized. But what the colonizers did is as painful as it is unfortunate. When they divided the continent into spheres of influence, one of the things they did was to attack the legal regimes of all countries, of all nations. So that if you are a Zulu, or a Venda, or a Kosa, or an Ovambo, or a Vimbundu, if you had laws relating to marriage, it was taken away and replaced. If you had law relating to land, it was taken away. If you had criminal law, it was taken away. If you had commercial law, it was taken away. You are in South Africa, which is now a sphere of influence of the Afrikaners and later the English. You now have imposed on you something called Dutch Roman law. It means it is the law that was meant for the Dutch and the Romans. It is now being applied to Africans. They did that. If you are in West Africa and you are in La Côte d'Ivoire, you are in Senegal, you are in Guinea, you are in Mali, you are in Niger, you are in Burkina Faso, you are in Benin, in Togo, in Gabon, in Cameroon. They imposed upon you the laws that were meant for the French, complete with Code Napoleon, which was made during the leadership of Napoleon Bonaparte. And they make that your law. If you are the Portuguese, you are in Cabo Verde, in Guinea-Bissau, in Angola, or in Mozambique, or in Sao Tome and Principe, you had the Portuguese impose their laws on you. If you are in Somalia, the portion of it that was controlled by the Italians, you had Italian law imposed on you, as they did in Libya. And of course, if you are in the Maghreb and you are colonized by the French in Morocco, in Tunisia or Algeria, they did the same to you, so that you had something called the common law. The effect of this was to undermine African legal systems, and they imposed upon you laws that were made to benefit them, because these were no longer independent states. Well, either they were protectorates, or they were colonies, or later they became trust territories. And these trust territories came about particularly in areas that had been colonized by the German, such as parts of Cameroon, such as parts of Togo, Rwanda, Burundi, and Tanganyika, which were then taken away from them after the 1914-1918 war, normally referred to as the World War, but which was essentially a war of European tribes. So all these served to affect African legal systems, and it was disruptive. It was disruptive in several sectors, which I now want us to examine. If you look at the area of land law and the manner in which African societies own land, and I want to focus first in Southern Africa, where land remains a problem up to today. If you look at the areas where they were pastoralists. You go to the Western Cape where they were the Khoisan, who are hunter-gatherers. The whole idea of land ownership was communal. If you went to the Zululand, the chiefs held land in trust for the people, as was the case among the Xhosa and the Pedi and the Venda. But the British and the Afrikaners came and started issuing title deeds. And when they did this, they dispossessed Africans of their land. And as I speak to you now, in what is the Republic of South Africa, 72% of the land is in the hands of 4% of the population. That is how devastating land law, changed by the colonizers, impacted the South African regime. You can now begin how see how foreign law has devastated that part of Africa. If we come to East Africa and we look at the country known as Kenya, and this was particularly so in what is described as the White Islands. And in the White Islands and in the Central Highlands around Mount Kenya, where you have the Agikoyo community, what they did was to come to this part of the world. They took fertile land. They told Kenyans and the Agikoyo that you shall not plant coffee. Coffee was only to be planted in the manner that was prescribed by their law. They went into Rift Valley. They say you could not plant tea. And during the struggle for independence and much earlier in 1922, and one need only read the book called The British Gulag to see how the Agikoyo were then deprived of their land and taken into camps. And the land question among the Agikoyo has never been settled. The impact of land acquisition, according to the British, was devastating in Kenya. The same was true in Uganda, where they impacted the Baganda and the Bunyoro Kitara Empire. One therefore sees how the foreign land affected Africans in a devastating way. And when we talk about this, we are not talking about history. As I speak to you now, in Kenya, the descendants of the Mau Mau are still asking for reparations, and they have not received reparations. When you go to Nigeria in Edo State, where Benin is, they changed their laws, and the British literally stole the artifacts which are to be found in the British Museum in London, in the Smithsonian Museum in the United States, in La Louvre in France, and in Brussels. And because the law relating to theft was made by them, they did not consider this to be theft. They are now beginning to return some of the artifacts. I'm speaking to you here on the 28th day of February, the year 2025. Yesterday, the 27th day of February, the year 2025, they returned a few artifacts to Benin in Nigeria. We look forward to the return of all these stolen artifacts. And they did this to our law. They did not only do that, they even changed the law relating to marriage, the law relating to inheritance. And African societies have been impacted by these laws because these are foreign laws. But the devastating impact is because of our training. Most of us, including myself, have been trained on the basis of foreign law. And it is now our duty to deliberately begin to decolonize our minds in order to see things clearly. Kenya's Ngugi Wa Thiong'o, in his book Decolonizing the Mind, talks not only about decolonizing the language, but decolonizing our laws. In his book, The River Between, he has a character called Wayaki, whom he tells, go and learn the ways of the white man, but come back that you may change your society. The same theme is seen in Chinua Achebe's Things Fall Apart, where he says that the white man came, the colonizer, and he cuts the things that held us together, and things have fallen apart, and we can no longer see the things the way we did it. This was the handiwork of the colonizer. And today, therefore, as we talk about the impact of foreign law, as we talk about the impact of Dutch Roman law, as we talk about the impact of French law, as we talk about the impact of British law, which is called the common law, we are seeing societies which have been affected very negatively. And the time is now for us to retrace our steps. Perhaps somebody can say, and legitimately so, that we may continue to agonize, we may continue to lament, but even as we lament and agonize, we must now begin to organize. And that organization requires, among other things, that we must ask ourselves, what kind of laws are we teaching our young men and women? How are we teaching in the area of the law of property in land? How are we teaching in the law relating to foreign commercial transactions? How are we teaching as regards what constitutes marriage? How are we teaching as regards inheritance? And with the advent of things such as artificial intelligence, do we have something that can be described as African law? And of course, I'm not saying that it is uniform across the African nations, but I'm saying, can it be standardized so that when we are talking about African law and foreign law, we can have legal systems that speak to the uniqueness and the specificities of different African communities. And that is why Africa, long recognized as early as 1963, when we were regaining our independence, or a little bit earlier, when Ghana was regaining our independence in 1957, that we must begin to rethink. Indeed, when you listen to Kwame Nkrumah in 1963 on 25th day of May, 1963 in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, when you listen to Haile Selassie on that day, when you listen to Mwalimu Nyerere on that day, they are saying that we must now begin to emphasize the things that unite us so that we can begin to have legal regimes that will address our unique African circumstances. And indeed, it is in that spirit that in the year 2013, when we have Africa Agenda 2063, founded on seven pillars, the iconic statement is that we shall organize our affairs to be an important player in the world, enjoying our cultural diversity, but doing things that are for the benefit of the continent of Africa. And it's in that regard that I understand Africa Continental Free Trade Area, which, if handled properly, will lead us to harmonize our laws. And when our laws are harmonized, we shall begin to operate as a diverse Africa, but united in purpose, so that other laws which are alien to us will not be allowed to undermine our African affairs. And when we are strong from inside, we can strong to help us to collaborate and to work with the others. That is Africa that we look forward to, the Africa of laws which are homegrown, to use a complicated term, autochthonous laws, homegrown. That is Africa for you. Ladies and gentlemen, our mother continent is a continent of many issues. But as we think about the next time, let us say our bye-byes in the knowledge that we'll come back to continue examining the mother continent. Bye-bye, and see you later.